Greetings, everyone. This is Christina Turin. It's a pleasure to be on the call with you today. Would you do me a favor and press number one on your keypad if you can hear me? Love it when I see those hands all raised. Thank you very much. So people are signing on. We have quite a few people here. Because I want to keep this limited to our usual 1 hour or running over about 10 minutes, I'm just going to acknowledge the people that are on the call, and then we're going to just jump right in with all of the things that we want to talk about, because this is a very important part of the work that we do, talking about the hospice work and the end of life. So I want to make sure that we cover all kinds of questions. I will be taking any questions that anybody has regarding the January quiz, and I would like to talk about a couple of the things that are on there because I feel that they're very important. So right now I see that we have Libby Gilroy, Terry Harper, Stephanie Evans, Martina Fowler, Colette McLeod, Diane Tapp, Ginny Oman, Linda Hammond, Joy Indomenico, Katie Walsh, Jennifer Reed, Barbara Irvin, Eden McTurniff, Martha Valvogel Warren, Leela Scoville, Lee Elliott, Jennifer Ellis, Shirley Allett, Leslie Searles, Gwen of White Owl, Sharon Stoll, Karen Unger, and let's see, people are still coming on, so when people pop on here, they just kind of get put into, I don't understand how they put them in different places and not at the end of the list or anything. Emily Delorme Newsom has signed on. I can't remember if I said Karen Unger, but I think I did. So welcome to everybody. So I want to make sure that everybody's on. Let me just look over at my emails to see if anybody's having any problems so far. It doesn't look like they are. And I think before we get into announcements and things like that, why don't we just jump right into the January lesson. And first of all, I'll take questions from anybody about anything that's not clear about the January lesson. So if you have a comment or a question, please push number one on your keypad right now. Okay. Let's go to Colette McLeod. You have the mic, Colette.
Wonderful to be here tonight. I have a quick question, I guess. It was about the phases of the grieving process and what kind of music is suitable. I had read in the manual kind of an outline for the different phases, but I was wondering if there was more information that I missed.
Well, that was one of the things, Colette, that I really want to talk about tonight, about the different kinds of music to play. So let me take another question here from somebody else, and then we'll just jump right into that because I think that's one thing that people should really start thinking about, the different kinds of music, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for your question. And let's go to Barbara Irvin. You have the mic right now. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, just a quick one. Number three, you asked to please take time to reflect on questions, and you listed them, who am I, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then to incorporate the answers in the paper. Well, I started writing a little bit thinking, you know, I'll elaborate on the paper, and then I found that I put quite a bit. Do you want that in the quiz, or do you just want it on the paper? And are we supposed to just have done that, sign up to ourselves, and then address it later? I wasn't sure which. So right now it's on my quiz. Then I was going to just move that to the paper, but I didn't know. Does it matter? What did you
expect?
Well,
let me answer that question for you. When you do your portfolio, you put your quizzes in and you put your papers in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you make two portfolios.
Right.
You make one for yourself and for your mentor, for the people in the National Standards Board to really get a sense to know what you've studied and what you've learned from it. So that first portfolio, you may put a lot more of those personal things in. Your second portfolio is pretty much the same, but you don't have to put all the second, all the personal stuff in the second one, because the second portfolio is like your, it's what you're going to show people when you go out to get a job.
Right.
So you don't have to have all of that personal information on the second one. So then the question then becomes usually whether or not you want to have that in the form of the quiz or the paper. I would say to on the quiz, to keep it short, the mentors don't have a lot of time because they have so many students, is to keep it shorter and then to elaborate it more on the paper.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And let's see, anybody else? Push number one on the keypad. Okay, well, let's jump in then with Colette's question about music to play. We're talking specifically here, music to play for the dying process, because we're talking about hospice this particular month. And I have to say, it was a very profound experience working at San Diego Hospice for, how many years? It was 17 years. And we had probably about 8 people a day on average pass away. And in San Diego, there were over 1,000 patients in the community. And usually they would come in at the very end with pain out of control. And during that time, they received certainly all kinds of things to control the pain. But we also had a very strong integrative palliative care program. And the patients received healing touch. The doctors all knew about healing touch. They all studied it. Everybody that was an intern doctor and nurse at our hospice learned that. They learned things about aromatherapy. They learned about putting coffee grounds into a container under the bed to soak up the smells in the room. They learned about the aromatherapy. They learned about acupressure points. They learned about what we do with music. So what I'm going to talk to you about is what we were doing with the music. So what you haven't had at this point is the number 9 lesson on the Chinese 5 elements. And everything that you would learn in the Chinese 5 elements is so very, very powerful. And with the study that I did with Fabian Lamon, and you can do more further research on his program. It's called Tama Do, TAMA-DO. And you will get a huge sense. He explains it very well about people's personalities, different parts of the body that respond at different times. And all of that information goes hand in hand with all of the other traditions of the dying process. What I did quite a few years ago was I got all of these recordings from Wind Records, W-I-N-D Records, and the Shanghai Orchestra had put out all of these recordings of music that they use in China to balance energy. And it's not just China. I've noticed that the same type of modes and music are used in other Asian countries, including Japan and Singapore. And they listen throughout the day to music that actually helps them with what they are experiencing throughout the day. So it's a very cyclical type of way of using music. from there, I took that music, the Chinese music, and I analyzed it, and I found the mode of music that we have in our Western culture from the seven Greek modes, and was able to identify the five Asian modes, the five Chinese modes, and how they related to those sounds. Were they uplifting? Were they grounding? Were they deep minor? Were they lighter minor? Were they kind of, what's the word, not transcendent, but they kind of left you hanging, that type of feeling. So that particular lesson that will be coming up on lesson number 9 will show you the correlation between the modes that you're studying right now. You've had the Dorian, you've had the Aeolian, you've had the Mixolydian, you're on to the Locrian, coming up to the Ionian. And you're going to be going into the pentatonic, and that's where you have the five tones instead of the seven different bass notes. So when we get back to the dying process here, what we have is the dissolution of elements. And the first one that you're going to see when people come into the hospice is that the earth element is going to start dissolving. And there's kind of a rule of thumb. There's a belief system that are in many different traditions that it takes about 28 days for the whole elements to dissolve. And, of course, when it comes to things like accidents and where people or gunshots or things like that, when people die quickly, that's a very accelerated. But in that process, the first element to leave is the earth element. And that's where people are feeling like they're losing their contact with the ground. They usually ask for more pillows to be propped up. They're still eating food in the hospice. So one of the things that you can do is you can quickly look when you go into the room to see if that the tray is on there and they're still eating. But at that point, things are beginning to shut down. And you'll see at that point they just need to have that kind of support, not only with pillows and being propped up in bed and the way they're talking, you know, being like, what is it like to die? And in fact, they'll ask you a lot of times, I'm scared of dying, what is it like? And those are the times when you just, you know, simply say, you know, you're going to be very well taken care of. And I remember my dad saying, I'm afraid to die. How do you do it? And the nurse said to him, well, Mr. Cooper, that's between you and the big guy upstairs. And he just kind of squeezed my hand at that point when she said that. So you're going to get things, people asking you questions like that. Now, the music that goes along with the earth element in the Asian recordings is equivalent to what we call our Ionian mode. It's a major mode. It is not so light that it's hee-haw happy, but it's lighter. And it's also grounding. An example of this would be a song like Suo Gan. It's a major mode. It's one that has a lot of structure. So you want to have songs that have structure, that you're not just kind of free-floating all over the place and not making any sense with your improvisations. And eventually that's what's going to happen with your improvisations. Once you get that sense that I can let go with that right hand and let it travel, eventually you're going to end up realizing with those like 8-bar patterns that you're working with in the music that you'll be able to create a structure with that sound. And that will be very, very healing for a person. Repetition is very good. So a song like Suo Gan is very good. The earth element is the element when people who worry too much, when you have too much earth element, you have too much worry. And what you want to do is you want to be able to calm down that worriedness. So you'll be able to do that with the music. You don't want to play anything deep and sad and aeolian and going into the whole depths of everything. The consciousness is already realizing things are beginning to shut down, and they just want that support. So the second element, after the earth element starts dissolving or finishes dissolving, the second element is the water element. And that's where you're going to find that people are usually hooked up to the Foley bags. They have a catheter. At that point, they're going to be very thirsty. You'll usually see on the tray that there's a cup of water with a straw in it. They're still able to swallow. At this point, they're not interested in food, so you would not see the food on the table. And when this is happening, the water is just leaving the body, and there may be a lot of tears going on at that point and secretions. So with the Asian music, the five tones that they have, the water element relates to a very deep aeolian mode. So this would be one where it sounds very watery, like waterfalls. Or you'll see a couple songs in the Chinese Five Elements that I put in there, which have to do with being by the water. They're very fluid. They sound like ocean waves. And this helps to replenish that water that they're losing to comfort them in the process. It's reflective. And you have to remember at this time that the body is shutting down. So it's not that you want to bring back all that water to them, but to be able to visualize that water. The third element that dissolves after the water element is the fire element. And that's when people feel like they're beginning to burn up. Very often you'll see a patient with a towel on their forehead just to keep the temperature. The fire is leaving the body, and it leaves it very often through the head. And you'll find that the extremities become very cold at this point. And during this time, with this dissolving, they're not able to actually swallow that much. And so you'll see very often a swab on the tray next to them. Now, with the fire element, if we were to balance energies, if somebody did not have enough fire element, then we would be playing some very up-tempo Mixolydian and Ionian music. But this is not what we want to do in hospice, because this is part of the process of letting go. Now, all we want to do is to just be able to calm the person during that time. So we stay at that time within that water element when that element is leaving and they're burning, the sense of burning up is happening. Then you want to just be able to keep in with that deep aeolian mode at that point. The last element that dissolves is the air element, and that's when you start hearing the Chain Stokes breathing pattern, the raspy breathing. Sometimes the lungs start filling up with fluid, and they have to come and turn the person so that the fluids drain out. And this is the point where you're in there working with a person. Very, very, very important to be able to play with that breathing. And it may be a very irregular breath at that point. So this is where we take that Locrian mode that you've been working with this month, and that sense of no place that the sound has to go. It is suspended. You are creating that cradle of sound so that your improvisation may only be a few notes. Less is definitely more here. And sometimes when people are taking their last breath, you're just humming. And you're humming to that resonant tone of that person. Each person has that resonant tone. And it's still there. And even when they take the last breath, it hovers. And when you find that resonant tone, and the Locrian is the seventh degree, then what you're going to do is you're going to focus on that sound and breathe with the person. And you're going to anchor it against the Aeolian of the mode that that seventh tone falls in. So, for instance, let's say a person has a resonant tone of B. So you go, but you would anchor it against the Aeolian of the key of C, because B is the seventh degree of the key of C. And then you would drop your left hand to the Aeolian. And it may be as simple as just playing A, B, A, B. And the main thing at this point is just to let the person know that you're there and that they're not alone. And you're creating this sound where they're going to be able to spring off if they want to or not. The one thing you need to remember in all of this is that you are never, never, never going to cause a person to die. You do not have that power over a person. They may choose to die when you're playing for them, but you have never caused them to die. Remember that, because when you are in the room, very often in a hospice room, they will die when you're playing, because the music is beautiful. And that's why it's so important to learn how to do that beautiful improvisation in the Locrian mode. So right now, you've just been working about playing the B against the A minor. And what's so beautiful about that is that when they've taken their last breath, in the room, if there are people there, they may be very, very sad. And at that point, you can end up just slipping right into the Aeolian and just playing reflective music until things start happening where the nurse comes in, pronounces the person has died, taken the time, done the vitals. But there's also another thing that happens very often in the hospice room, and that is that people have been there for days and weeks on end, and let's say it's somebody's mother or father, and they keep saying, "It's okay, Mom. It's okay, Dad. You can let go." And sometimes it's sort of like the waiting for this, and it's not that they're happy that they died. It's just that there's a relief of the tension. And at that point, because you're hovering between the Aeolian and the Ionian with that seventh degree note of their resonance, then you can open it up. Instead of playing the reflective with the third closed chords, you can open it up, take that third out of that chord, put it on top, have that sixth interval, and the music becomes ascending, becomes transcending. And it opens up so that you're playing in the Ionian while things are happening in the room, and it becomes a beautiful transcendence of music. These are all things that you're preparing yourself to learn right now with studying the modes and the improvisation. And when you get to the ninth lesson, you'll see how all of this fits together. And then when you get to the 10th lesson, you'll see how you can create this circle around a person so that you can actually relax somebody, go into that beautiful depths of the human soul, and then raise it up to the transcendence. And this is really the beautiful, wonderful thing about this program. It works. People die a beautiful death. And not every death is beautiful. We have very many instances where we've had somebody, you know, writhing in pain, and yet being able to find that resonance of them and just keep going, it's almost like breathing with them. And this is a time when you really need to use your voice a lot with the harp, because the harp can be almost too much of a pluck and too much of an attack at this very, very tender time. So that's what I wanted to say about the dissolution of elements. And right now I've been talking quite a bit, so I'd like to take any comments or questions from anybody. So you can press number one on your keypad. Okay, let's go to Martina right now. Martina, you have the mic.
Hi, Christine. My question is, let's say this person was in the first stage of dying, and so for the entire time that you're there, if that stage does not change in any way, you would stay in the Ionian mode?
Pretty much, because usually when I'm in there with somebody, it's 40 minutes to 45 minutes, unless it warrants being there a little bit longer. If I know what stage they're in at that point, I will play appropriate during that stage.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And let's see, let's have somebody else with a comment or a question. And let's go to Jennifer Reed. You have the mic.
Good evening. I just want to repeat, so I understand what you were saying, with the Locrian and matching their breathing, you get to a point where you anchor their resonant tone,
mm-hmm.
and you go to the Aeolian of that resonant tone,
mm-hmm.
and you play that till it's time to be silent?
You play it until you get the indication from them that it's time to leave.
Okay.
This is what we actually teach in that level two.
Yes.
So what I'm giving you right now is some information about how this actually progresses through the study right now. And Jennifer, you've already taken the level two, so you've actually seen that in progress. But it's... First, one has to really understand the basic of how to find the mode of a piece and what those, that number one lesson, finding the mode of a song and being able to identify that. And that's why a lot of people come for the refresher if they've already taken the level two, because it's a process that keeps building on itself. And I know that you're doing that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And let's see. Let's go down here to Marilyn Schechter. How are you, Marilyn?
I'm fine. Thank you. I find this really fascinating, but I wonder if you're doing, like, do you have a pattern of the way you play that is written down or anything before you go into one of these dying situations? Like, in other words, do you do it sort of the same every time, or?
No, it's completely unique to each situation. When you study finding the resonant tone, and by then understanding the different modes, the seven different modes that you're studying right now in the key of C, all of that will transfer to seven different modes in different keys of music. So let's say right now a person needed some earth music and you're in the key of C. That would be the Ionian mode, and it would start on C. Mm-hmm. So you would be playing, your improvisation with a 1-4-5 chord, which is the C and then the F and the G. That's going to be your next month's lesson. Let's say a person had a resonant tone of G and you needed to play some earth music for them. Ionian, uplifting, earth music, you would play in the key of G, starting with the G because that's the Ionian mode. And the 1-4-5 would be the G, then the C, then the D chords. So let's go to something a little bit different. Let's say you're playing for somebody who needs some grounding, and that's the Dorian mode. And let's say their resonant tone is an A. So the A, you would look at that and you would say that's the second degree of what key? And that would be the key of G. So you would start playing on the A because you're matching the resonance of that person and at the same time you're grounding them. Okay? So we're getting into things right now that are more complicated, but they are more refined, and they when you know how to do this, when you know how to play this for people, it's really where the magic happens. It's where all of those miracles seem to come that people talk about and write about in their experiences.
A family member said to you, like, you know, such and such was their favorite song. Could you play that? Like right in the middle of the thing you're trying to do.
Right. And you will get that a lot, too, because people are so used to being entertained. And usually what will happen is I'll go into a room, and if I get a sense that they are wanting some entertainment and all that, I will play a song, you know, what is a favorite song. I'll play it because they need to know. They need to be entertained at that point. They're going through very tense times. So you want to have some of those songs, and if you don't know it, then that's the purpose of learning those 33 tunes in the different categories. You can simply say, oh, you like that one, especially like if they say they want a certain hymn. And you'll think to yourself, I don't know that hymn, but I know three others, so I'll play one of the others. Or they might say, oh, do you know Memory from Cats? And you'll say to yourself, I don't know that one, but, you know, sounds like these people, you know, like Broadway stuff, so I'll play another Broadway tune. And then after you've pacified them and played for them, then you can go to the patient who's usually either conversing or they're not conversing at that point. And then that's when there's a whole progression of how we find the resonant tone. And you can just simply say to the people, I just need to check the tuning on my harp right now. And then you go through the process finding the resonant tone with the person. And then you know what kind of songs you're going to play. You know where you're going to improvise. And if you're really top-notch, you can play a certain song within that particular key. And that's why it's really nice to know a lot of different tunes in a lot of different keys of music. Okay. Now, a lot of people don't have those tunes in their head all the time, and that's what the Color My World program was set up to do, is to provide 120 tunes in different categories so that you can clip them to your harp and not have to carry a music stand, but to be able to look at the patient while you're playing so that you're gauging their breathing, and that's determining your tempo. And then at the same time, you can actually play the type of music. So if somebody's asking for a lullaby, or if they're asking for a song about hope and inspiration, and all of your mentors right now have a list of all these songs, how they fit into the different categories. So you need to be asking your mentors at this point, can you send me the list that Christina sent you where all of those basic melodies fit into either grounding or into uplifting or reflection? And they have those ready to give to you. Okay. Another question, Marilyn?
No, that's good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And let's go up here to Linda Hammond. You have the mic.
Hi. You referenced in the water, when you were going over this, the water and fire, to play the deep Aeolian mode.
Mm-hmm.
Could you define what you mean by deep?
Right.
Are you talking about lower tones or?
Sure. There are, by deep I mean it's slower. Let me back up a little bit. The water element corresponds to our very, very slow, heartfelt Aeolian mode. But we also have songs that are in the Aeolian mode, but they're lighter. I'm trying to think of one that I can tell you right offhand. Let's see. A good wood one. Let's take a spiritual, like sometimes I feel like a motherless child. And that one is not as slow, and it's not as deep. It's not as wrenching, maybe. Not as wrenching, maybe, is the word. Then the water element, minor. It's the different songs. And the lighter Aeolian mode is the mode that relates to what they call the wood element in the Chinese five elements. It's reflective, but it's also very flexible. And the water is much more reflective and almost, you know, going into that really deep place in a person. Does that make any sense?
Well, we're getting there.
Getting there.
You.
I think when you hear the Chinese five element lesson, you'll understand it, because there's a lot of examples on that one. And that'll be coming up in the spring. Okay?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, let's go to Ginny Ullman right now. Hi, Ginny, how are you?
Hey, Christina, it's great to hear your voice and know that you're well. I should probably wait till I get to San Diego and get this wonderful training that's happening after the conference. And then after that, I can see already that I'm going to want in another 6 months to take that training again. Because I will, in the meantime, I will have learned so much more during the spring semester, getting to that ninth tape that you were talking about, the ninth
mm-hmm.
DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just needing a little clarification again. I'm sorry to hammer the same question over and over, but you were saying hear their resonant tone through their breathing. That's how you get it.
That's one of the ways.
Okay. Then sing it, and then gently, softly play it on the harp. And
mm-hmm.
then you said after that to go to the Aeolian of that resonant tone and play it against that.
Mm-hmm. In the left hand. Right.
Okay. Play it against it. Okay. That's all I needed clarified. Thank you.
I think right now what I'm giving you this information is really beyond the point where a lot of you are right now, because
yeah.
right now it sounds like, oh, my gosh, how would I ever do that? Oh, my gosh, would I ever be able to do that? And the thing is, everything's laid out step by step for you in this program, so that once you do what you're supposed to be doing musically right now with your improvisations, you've got those skills under your hands, and then we introduce something else and then something else, and it all builds onto it. So for anybody who starts thinking, oh, this is so much more than I ever thought it was going to be, I thought I was just going to learn how to play some pretty songs and go in and do it, don't fear. Don't fear, because before you know it, I have to say, people come out of this program saying that they just are amazed at how their playing completely changed from beginning
yes.
to end. So don't, I hesitate to give you too much of that information right now because you're going to be thinking about it when you're doing it. And the thing is, you just need to play along with the DVDs at this point because it will all fall into place.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let's take a question from Stephanie Evans. How are you, Stephanie?
I'm good. Thank you very much. And actually, I was going to put my hand down because my question was a little bit more advanced, and in light of what you just said, I was wondering if I was going to ask.
No, that's okay. You know, there are people here that have already taken the level two, and so if everybody else just realizes not to get, you know, overloaded on it, I'd love to be able to answer some of the questions.
Okay. My question had to do with the resonant tone. West End tunings, we usually deal with whole steps and half steps, and I was just curious if you ever found patients who are within that quarter tone, and I'm just, that was really my question. Have you found patients where their resonant tone is, for us, between the scales, between the cracks, as it were?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. And I think I will reserve the answer for that one when we get to the level two.
Okay, thank
but,
you.
But, yes, and you have to remember a person's resonant tone changes. It can change by the hour. It can change by the day, the week. I go between a D and an E-flat, and some days I just have to hear E-flat in order to calm down, or some days the E-flat will make me almost sick to my stomach. And it was interesting because one of our graduates, one of our mentors, had taken the vibroacoustic harp therapy program with Sarah Jane Williams. And she had the vibrating bed, and she brought it to one of the conferences. And I said, okay, Anita, I need you to calm me down. So she got on there, and I said, she started playing, and she goes, so what do you want to start with? And I said, well, let's start with E-flat. So she put the E-flat on, and I literally thought I was going to be sick to my stomach and throw up. And I said, Anita, please stop. And she looked at me. I said, no, I can't do this. And I said, could you go into the key of D, please? And she goes, oh, man. She says, you would make it hard for me. I was just in three flats. Now you want me to put all the flats up, and you want me to put two sharps up? I said, please. And as soon as she went into D, it was as if I was wrapped in the most beautiful down quilt and just held. It was absolutely comforting. So those are the things that people experience when you're finding resonant tone. And if you're playing a song and you're not playing that to the person and you're matching their breath and you're just, you know, they might say, oh, that's very lovely. Thank you. I've had enough. And then you'll pick up your harp and you'll walk out and you'll say to yourself, I wonder if that made any difference. You can't do a lot of harm with playing harp music, but you can do a lot of good if you really know what you're doing. You can make it a much more positive experience. You have to realize the harp is not for everyone. And if you miss that opportunity of being able to connect with the person on all levels, you need to know how to speak with them, how to find the resonant tone, how to match their breathing, how to be able to play songs that they like. And when you can do that, it is extremely special. So, yes, and one of the places, Stephanie, that those quarter tones really make a big difference is certainly in people who are used to hearing raga music and music from different cultures. But very often people will be between those two different half steps.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I'm loving these questions. Keep them coming. Diane Tapp, you have the mic.
Hi, everyone. It's been really fascinating hearing you describe your expertise and just walking through this whole process. And so I think that other than some of the more technical things about finding the resonant tone and how you accommodate that. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about just some advice on your personal journey in this, because I think, profound work in hospice and sacred work, but I think we can be afraid of it, we can romanticize it, but I wonder if you could just talk about growing into being comfortable yourself working in this context.
Okay. This goes back to 1990, and that's when I started working in the hospital in Vermont. And I think the first way that I became comfortable with it is first that I had a pretty good grip on playing the harp. So that was something that I'd been doing my whole life. So that part was a plus for me. One of the things I realized is I had to learn how to unplay a lot, because working in the hospital, there's so much going on that when you've played a lot of harp music and been classically trained, you have to really go into that mentality of less is more. So having studied the resonant kinesiology program during that time, we learned how the sound vibrations really work sympathetically on different parts of the body. And that gave me a huge, huge confidence. My confidence was not huge when it came to finding resonant tone. It came huge understanding everything behind it. But it took me a good 2 years before I felt comfortable finding resonant tone. And all of the students in the program, it was a two-year program led by Susan Borg, and all of the students seem to be getting it. And I'm like, what are they hearing? What are they picking up on? And I kept searching for something, trying to hear it with my ear, and finally, all of a sudden, I just let go of that, and it happened. And then all of a sudden, I started hearing resonant tone around me everywhere. And this was also during the time when I was touring with Kim Robertson a lot. So we were doing a lot as far as music theory and modes, and being able to focus on one particular sound and take it and make music out of it. So those two things went hand in hand at that time. And from the time that I had played for my father in 1990, I just kept going into hospitals and just absolutely seeing the difference that it would make, and seeing what would happen if I went in and played one of my regular harp songs and people would just simply say nice and that was it, to actually taking that information that I learned through the resonant kinesiology program. So I would say that is probably my biggest aha in the whole thing, and then taking that information and then putting it into a form where people can learn how to do that themselves through this program. There's one other part to this that I haven't mentioned, and it had to do with a very special, I wouldn't say incident, but a very special thing that happened to me in the late 80s. And that was when I ended up having an experience where everything, I was able to let go of everything. And through that, I also had a harp next to me, and I was able to pick it up. And for the first time in my life, I was able to start playing music without using my head in the sense of having memorized a song or having any clue what I was going to do. I was at a professional harper's gathering, and that night I went to bed and I was very, very frustrated because everybody was just jamming and playing, and I was like, I don't know how to do this. I can play anything in the orchestra, but I don't know how to do this jamming. What are they doing? And then the next day I had this experience where all of a sudden it was totally let go and music started flowing through my fingers, and it was as if my hands were taken over. And that was when I started analyzing what were my hands doing without me knowing it. And when I analyzed it, that was when all of these modes started coming in through the study that I had in music school and making it understandable for people. So I guess that's a long-winded answer to your question.
That's great. Thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you in San Diego.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. Let me see. Let's go down to Shirley Allen from down in Australia. How are you doing there? Is it hot?
Oh, hello, Christina. I'm
hello.
Very well. Hello, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, good. Well, I was worried you couldn't. I'm from a nursing background. I've been a nurse 40 years now. I hate to think of this figure because it's a long time, but and I find being with people is very, very comfortable because of my nursing background. It's the music for me that isn't so comfortable, but I am learning, and I'm just finding what you're saying is bringing so much together. It was worthwhile going through and listening to these calls again, because I'm just learning so much. And thanks for giving me the opportunity.
You're so welcome, Shirley. So welcome. A couple other things along the line of working with people in the dying process. Most hospices will expect you to take a training so that you'll be familiar with some of the things that you're going to see. We've talked mostly about going into a room where you're going to be sussing out very quickly what's happening in the room, what's happening with the patient, what's happening with the family members. There are going to be some very loaded times, especially if you're working in children's hospice. That's a very huge one. Some of the things that you may not be familiar with is that many times they will ask, you will be asked if you would go in and play for somebody who's just passed away. And when that happens, it's a whole different experience there. And at San Diego Hospice, we used to have a tradition where the nurse would come in, open up the door to the room, and you would think that the breeze would come in when the door was open. And I would be sitting there at the foot side of the patient, and it was as if you could almost feel the breeze. Well, not almost. I could actually feel the breeze leaving and going out the door. And sometimes it would just, there would be this sense of a breeze just hovering around the room. There's a lot of things that we don't know, and about the energy of the spirit, the energy of the soul, and these are the type of things that you can learn if you're ever interested in the Anamkara Project that you've read about this month. One of the other things that you may experience, and that is after somebody dies, their body at that point has completely shut down. And if somebody, if you're in the room when one of the nurses come in to clean a person and they roll them over, you may see that their whole backside may be all black. And that's because the blood is settled. And it's that was a huge one for me. That one really stepped me back, especially when I saw it with my mother, because I was like, wow, you know, what's this whole black and blue on her back? And it was just simply the blood is not flowing anymore, and so it settles. And if you talk to people who work as undertakers, they say many times when somebody's died and it's face down, it's the most huge job for them to try to bring back the color of the body through makeup. So those are things that you really need to be prepared for. There are going to be smells. There are going to be emotions. I remember one group of students I had at San Diego Hospice where the man asked if we would come in and play for his wife who just passed away. They were like 88 years old and never separated. And he said, would you please play Amazing Grace? My wife's name is Grace. So we did as he asked and started playing. And then he completely fell apart. So luckily, the students were able to stand back, play very softly, and then that's when you take those skills that you learn in the transactional analysis, how to talk to somebody, how to mirror somebody. And they talk about, oh, I was with her for 70 years. And then you mirror it back. And the compassion, how to have a compassionate conversation instead of freezing up at that moment. I've often felt that unofficial regulation here in the program that in order for us to recommend anybody to be able to play in hospice that you've taken the level 2 and gone through the resident training, because if you haven't done that, then you really have missed the whole the beauty of being able to serve somebody, I believe. Okay, well, I'm beginning to get a little bit lost for putting words of very delicate situations here into good format for you folks. I've taken all the questions here. I just want to let you folks know that I did put information on your user account. I keep updating that about what's happening with the ESMs. We only had 2 people that were interested in being in Minneapolis this summer. So Rachel is going to go ahead. She's going to start getting level 1, which is you're studying right now, people interested this year, and then the following year we're hoping to do a class in Minneapolis on level 2. I've talked to Sharon, and let me go down here to Sharon. Oops, my mouse is stuck. Oh, hold on just a minute. Oh, something's stuck right here. There we go, Sharon. Okay, Sharon, you have the mic. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Gina.
Hey. So I'm just about ready to announce to everybody that sometime, I think it would be great if we go back to Tampa, Florida, where we had the wonderful ESM, and the place worked out great for us, and we had those 2 wonderful facilities. And I was just going to get a sense here from the people on the call that are not coming to the ESM in San Diego, if anybody might possibly be interested in Tampa next winter sometime. And we don't even know when it would be, but if I get enough people that will press number 1 here, what I'll do is I'll make note of that, and then I can be talking to them what time of the year would work best, and then we could probably set something up. What do you think?
That sounds good. Sometime after October.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. There's too much going on. So I've got Martha O'Hara, Libby Gilroy, I've got Eden McDernis, and let's see, anybody else? Joy and Domenico, anybody else? Linda Hammond, oh, look at this. Terry Harper, let's see, Linda, Eden, let's see, down here, and Karen Unger. So we almost have a full class right there.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. Let me just make sure. Leslie Searles. Did I have her? Leslie Searles? Sorry, folks, doing all this, but it's a good way for me to get some information. Eden, Joy, Linda, Martha, Terry, Libby. Okay, that looks great. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Great. I'll put you just as tentatives, and I'll be asking you folks what time of the year might work best for you folks, and then I'll get back to Sharon, okay?
Okay. Could I just say two things, Tina?
Absolutely.
First of all, for my students that are on the line, I just wanted to say that I'm getting ready to leave for a cruise on Saturday.
Whoa, nice.
It's our 41st anniversary.
Nice.
So I'm not sure whether I'll be able to check on the 20th, whether I'll be able to check the student page that
sure.
day specifically. So mm-hmm. you'll have a little bit extra time. I'll be back on Monday, the following Monday. I think that's the 23rd or 20. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but it's
sure.
the following Monday. So a week from.
So that would be a message here for Bernice and for Shirley and for Leslie and for Linda.
And Karen.
And let's see.
Junie.
Jenny. And Libby.
Yes. So just bear with me.
Okay.
And also, I'd like to know if there's anyone up in Atlanta that any of the HAARP practitioners up there. I have a dear friend whose granddaughter was in a was hit by a car on Thanksgiving Day up in Tallahassee. And she was in an induced coma, and she came out of the coma, and right after Christmas, they took her to Shepherd Rehab up in Atlanta. And so I'm wondering if there's a HAARP practitioner up in that area.
Is there anybody in the Atlanta area? If so, please contact me.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay, so that's good. So I look forward to talking to everybody next month.
Sounds great. Okay, is there anything right now? We didn't go over a lot of the January quiz, but there's a whole section on the grieving process of what kind of music to play, and you're going to be able to find that in your book, The Cradle of Sound, and all of the different the seven different phases of grieving and what kind of things to play. So that's going to be pages 329 to 330 in your Cradle of Sound book. And then also covering what kind of music to play for people in coma, you'll find on page 416 in the Cradle of Sound book. And some of the things that you really need to know are what are average what would be average normal blood pressure readings and body temperature and pulse rate and things like that. You want to make sure that you really have a good understanding of that. And so that's part of January quiz too. This month, of course, has been more reflective working with the hospice rather than some of the other topics that we're going to be coming up with, but it's definitely one of the most profound areas. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there. I sent out a update for the conference today. I know a lot of you can't make it, but I'm including you in on the updates that are being sent out so you can get a sense of the different people presenting and what they have to say, and then you can always get in touch with them on your own if you have any questions. So if somebody did not receive that update from me today, would you please push number one today so I can make sure that I have you on that mailing list? So it was all about the conference. It was called update number one. So It looks like everybody must have received it because I don't see any hands raised. So with that, we've come to 7 minutes past. Oh, let's see, Barbara. Okay, Barbara, I'll make sure you get a copy of that. And Eden, I'll make sure you get a copy of that as well. Okay. People who are listening to this recording, because you were not on the call today, please answer some of the questions. That would be whether or not you have received the update. If you haven't, let me know so I can get that to you. And if you're interested in the Tampa next winter, that'll be great. And with that update, it basically tells you, you know, if you want to come to the conference, we still are honoring a discounted price until January 20th. And it's going to be fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Okay, everyone. So I'm going to open everybody's mic and wish you all a wonderful month. And we'll talk to you again next month. Everybody has the mic. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you
so much for all what you're sharing.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.